This audio includes the questions and answers that Ray Humphrey had at the September 19th, 150th Maynard speech. We would encourage you first to listen to the original speech before listening to the Q&A.
We hopefully all know, originated with DEC. The first commercial firewall was the DEC firewall. It was developed by the Network Systems Lab out in Palo Alto. If you talk about that whole era of security when we knew we were getting hacked, because I heard some stories from, I was in the internet business group with Rosie.
Well, not only that.
Crazy stories.
Not only that, very quickly, when I was at Xerox, we invited Steve Jobs to come up to Palo Alto to look at what at Xerox we were working with, and we showed him something called Lisa. You all know Lisa as the mouse. We also showed him something called the GUI, the GUI. Yeah, we didn't have him sign a non-disclosure agreement. He left, went back, and founded a company, became a billionaire. Yeah. And Time Magazine had a big article about how we gave the crown jewels of Xerox away. I met Steve Wozniak a couple of years ago, and I said, you owe me $3 billion. And he laughed, no, I don't have the $3 billion. But we also, if you all know the worm, you know the worm started here at Digital. And the worm employee that was an intern here, his father was chief of security for, I think, NSA, or one of the large security companies, but the worms down here. We set up tremendous firewalls. The Chaos Computer Club tried to break into us from Europe, a lethal organization worldwide. Also, Steve Stoll, S-T-O-L-H-L, who a book has been written about him called The Cuckoo's Egg. They all tried to break into us, and during the one of the major league, I don't know anything about sports, but during one of the World Series of football, whatever that is, Digital paid a couple of $1 million for a security film of Digital. If you want to know what security is like at Digital, ask, and then there was a staccato, a prison number, and that was good news, bad news, because whenever you challenge a hacker or a hacker community, they would say, well, if you think you're secure, let us show you how insecure you are. And that's what some of the hackers would say to us. It's bad to brag that you're unbreakable, but every computer has a back door, as you know. Every lock has a key. And so we were constantly attacked with the Chaos Computer Club. They originated in Frankfurt, Germany, and I flew over to Frankfurt, and I said to their head of Chaos Computer Club, what do you want? And he said, I want a Vax VMS computer. I said, well, maybe we can do that. I'm not going to give you any promises. Meet me in France. So he flew to France, and in France, the financial police don't need a warrant. They don't need evidence to arrest you. So as soon as we met each other at the airport, he was scarfed up, he went to prison, the word went out was, don't screw around with Digital, they go for your jugular. Now it reminds me of another story. All the things we did against the Russians, we were successful at, truly successful, and it's to the skill of our workforce within DEC. But a year after I left Digital, I flew to Moscow to speak at a Global Hackers Convention. And I was the only nerd, I guess, whatever, only guy in a suit. Yeah. And when I landed in Moscow Airport, I was asked, did I have a certificate to import the very computers that they had been stealing from us for the last 20 years. They wanted me to show that I had certification to bring something into their country. So I thought, there's something back asswards here. But I had a great time at the Hackers Convention. Met a lot of people that are now millionaires as hackers. They're now security consultants, many of them. But I hope that answered the back doors and the trap doors and the
firewall.
The bulwarks, the firewalls that we put up.
Yeah. Well, it actually showcases that I actually do some lecturing on the thought leadership and academic circuits. And I actually start off with who had the first Fortune 500 website, Dak.
Ah.
Who invented the firewall, Dak.
Yeah.
Who had the virtual private network, Dak.
Yeah.
Who was the first marketing manager for the virtual private network?
I'm going to get in trouble because this is film, but our employees were tremendously talented. You all know you are. You are them. We had a sex club. Remember we had deck notes?
Deck notes.
Deck notes.
Yeah. Well, we had a sex club where, I know I'm talking out of school now, I'm going to get in trouble. We had employees that would talk about the affairs they were having with their coworkers, and we wanted to shut it down, but a number of our attorneys said, no, freedom of speech, we can't do it. So what I did is I confiscated this huge drum with all these tales of, in the politest sense, of what the coworkers were doing. So I'm sitting down here in Powder Mill, and I get a delegation from this sex group, numbered about 200, and they said, what are you doing to secure our information? And I said, you've got to be kidding. You're broadcasting it all over the tech world, digital world, and you're wondering how I'm going to secure it. Actually, I had it locked in a big safe. But now it leaves me one more thing, one story. We had Tech World here, and that was a real challenge. Some of you may have worked at Tech World. Fantastic job. The TV stations made networks wanted to film us because it was so unique. We brought in the QE2 that had just been rehabbed in Bremerhaven, Germany. The IRA in South Boston put out the word that they were going to sink the QE2. And I told the IRA and Ken Olson, it's impossible. Boston Harbor is so dirty, nothing will sink in it. But what we did, we hired Mossad, and those of you that were at Tech World, we had Mossad go underneath the QE2 24 hours a day to look for any bombs from some drunken Irishman that might stumble out of South Boston. I mean that in a kind way. We had snipers on all the roofs all around the World Trade Center. And the last day of Tech World, the Boston Globe wrote a great article that the QE2 sailed off into the sunset, the Mossad submariners went home, and the riflemen folded their rifles and left the rooftops. So it was a nice finale to Deck World with no incidents at all. But one other story about Ken. He didn't like the Boston Globe. I don't know if any of you knew that. If your name appeared in the Boston Globe as a successor to Ken, you put in your retirement papers. Truly. A true story. But sometimes there was a really dear employee here, a very dear friend of mine. She dealt with the Boston Globe. And Ken would call me up at 3 a.m. in the morning and say, who is this woman? I just read an article in the Boston Globe that this woman gave an interview. I said, Ken, you know her. She works for you. No, she doesn't. Ken, she does. Immediate report to you. So we'd argue for about half an hour, and then I said, Ken, I'll take care of it. I'll find out who she is. We'll take care of her. Next day, she'd be in Ken's office sitting chatting with him. He would have forgotten completely. But boy, if you gave us something to the Boston Globe that he didn't like, he would go for your jungle once more again, in a nice way. Sometimes we'd take the doors off executives' offices, take their telephone books away, take their secretary away, and you fall from grace for about 6 months. And then you get your door put back on and your telephone book reinstated. But they weren't mean things. They were tutorials, I think. So again, I think I have all your dossiers, by the way. So a couple of you might want to stay and we'll I can sell them. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. I'm familiar with, well, I used to work in technical language. Yeah. We did the Fortran compiler.
Sure.
We got bug reports called SPRs, Software Performance Reports.
Yeah.
If you might have any perspective on what the power of hackers in the broadest sense.
Absolutely.
For good as well as bad.
As Leo DeRocher said, it's a deja vu all over again. I'm looking at the hackers coming in from China and Russia and some of the other countries, and we look at it as a new threat. Now, let me tell you that back in the Ken Olson days, we were, and this is history now, the handout I gave you from Dewey Claridge, we were hacking into all, we America, and certainly digital, hacking into all the countries of the world, including the friendly countries, as they were to us, as our own French business unit was doing. I was called down to Savannah, Georgia, to talk about these, the security, the sacredness of digital computers to the FBI. And when I walked into the room, a fellow asked me a question, but he asked it in French. And I said, "Who are you with?" And he said, "French Sûreté." And so I said to the FBI, "Who are all these people here?" And the FBI said, "Well, they're our friends." And I said, "What do they want?" And the FBI sponsor said, "They want to know the back door to Vax VMS computers." I said, "You got to be crazy." And it reminded me when I saw all the information was given to the Taliban right now, how, you know, we suddenly find friends that are our mortal enemies, or could be. So that was one thing. The hacking exploits, we're consolidating so much information, centralizing it. Your information is being, our information, is being centralized in the pockets. This is a little bit off the subject, that I would suggest to each of you, you might once in a while check your credit report and ask for your personnel file, your medical records, etc. I'm on the board of a company with Tom Ridge and a couple of four-star generals and four-star admirals, and we're in the people management information business, and you'd be amazed that all your information is being brought into central databases. It may not be accurate when we're of an age group where I guess this passes us by, but a little bit younger crowd may apply for medical insurance, a job, a security clearance, and they get turned down because, one, they're overqualified. What they really get turned down for, oftentimes, is erroneous information that's of an adverse effect in their records. So I advise people all over, once in a while, see what's resting in a centralized database that belongs to you individually. It may need correction. And to your point, again, when I see the units now, they're breaking into systems, nothing new. We were doing that. We knew countries where Gaddafi's banking networks were going through countries that we digital managed. We knew everything that was going on. We had a major unit within digital, not one of us, but one of our sales forces was a major, the entire business unit, 30 people, was a major cocaine distributor for Southwest America. Southwest America. Unbelievable. And they were using our shipping, our boxing, our money to distribute drugs. So we spend with the DEA millions of dollars to track down their sources, their distribution centers, how many other digital employees were involved. They were unique because, again, we are the best of the best, but you have pockets of badness in every group. We can authorize, like, I'm going to make this up, maybe $5 million to help the DEA in tracking down this drug distribution chain that was run through our corporate business. Then at the last moment, you may remember Noriega, who was on our payroll for years, all of a sudden became our enemy. Oh, we had a bunch of Spanish DEC employees working with us. They were translating for the DEA. All of a sudden, all of our work was pushed aside, and the U.S. government focused on Noriega, and we had to handle the small digital unit on our own, which we did very capably. But I look to see some major exposures in cloud penetrations, in manipulation of data. I live next to bad news up here, but my next door neighbor in Florida is General Michael Flynn. Interesting man. He predicts that we'll be at war with China in 2 years. Now, China obviously holds most of our money, buying up real estate like mad in Naples, Florida, and other places. But the Chinese are in a cyber war with us. Putin is too, but Putin is focused more on reestablishing the old glory of the Soviet Union. So the really major threat right now is China. In all its technical achievements, I was telling some people at this table, during our trade shows, our digital employees, rightfully so, at 11, 12 o'clock would go and go to bed or go out and get a McDonald's. And I would walk in the trade show floor, some of them restricted with our forward producing technology, and I'd see our Chinese workforce there with screwdrivers unscrewing our systems and taking pictures and taking notes. You know, they're resilient and brilliant, and we underestimate the brilliance of people outside of America. I brought a bunch of Arabs to America 2 years ago, and they met with some of the senior people in the CIA to talk about oil production. And as the CIA people rambled about the excellence of how we control oil throughout the world, an Arab prince said, full stop, let me tell you how we handle it in Saudi Arabia. And he blew the CIA out of the water. And I thought, we truly do underestimate people. And I'll ask you a story. I took Digio down to Argentina, and we put on a big digital exhibit for the banking community on one day, and the military on another. And this is the last story. Military on another. And if you ever saw Evita, the Argentinian generals, their uniforms are crisp, razor sharp. They're suntan, there's tan trousers, etc. The entire leading generals of the Argentinian Air Force were sitting in front row, and a friend of mine put on a presentation on drug-sniffing dogs, cancer-sniffing dogs, and vegetation dogs. And he brought a dog down from America called Dolly, and Dolly started barking while my friend was on the podium. And my friend said, Dolly, you'll get your chance to speak in a moment. Dolly lifted up her leg and walked along the line of Argentinian generals and peed right across their uniform. In the back of the room, and I know that one of the generals could take a pistol and shoot the dog right then there. Dead silence. And then the senior general, chief of staff of the Argentinian army, started laughing, and everybody laughed. The next day, they gave the dog a medal for heroism. that's my last story. I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, yeah.
I've got a question for you. At the day of the sale of digital to our contact, you sat down next to me.
I did?
Yeah.
Okay. And do I owe you money? You owe me money, that's one point.
You were extremely nervous. I don't remember, you know, we did a little chit-chat, but you seemed to be very nervous about what was happening at that stockholders meeting.
Now, was this when Eckert, or whatever his name is, came to digital?
Piper,
yeah.
All I know is someone raised the point about the way the stock was going to be taxable to all of us that were still holding and that Palmer was getting, if I remember the number correctly, something like $6 million plus a tax override, the rest of us didn't know about. And we just sat there and were extremely nervous, like something was going to happen that unpleasant.
Like that
I spent time with Bob Palmer too. What GQ Bob? GQ Bob. A great guy, didn't know how to delegate, but he really believed in Digital. He had, I forget who his finance guy was that sat outside his office. Many of you probably know him. We were worried several times, including with Kent during shareholder meetings, because there were people that could do him harm. And with Bob, there were more people. Bob actually had a bomb planted in his mailbox. I remember happened to go to his house, and I told him to get down in the basement while we took the bomb out of his mailbox during his reasonably final days at Digital. But it's real world, you know. We talk about the violence now. We had violence in Digital. We had, during the downsizing, we had a couple who never knew, who didn't know if they were going to get terminated or not. So they took out their attention on their children, not here in the New England area, and their children murdered them.
Oh.
We had another person during the downsizing that came in and shot his computer and left a note on the computer. If you think what I did to the computer is bad, you should see my girlfriend. And he had shot her in a closet back at his house. We had kidnappings. Ken actually had, you may know, somebody tried to murder him, fired shots at him. And that man went to prison. And we monitored for probably 12 years to make sure that we knew when, if and when the person got out of prison. But he also had a sister. And she was his, well, I better not going through them. We monitored her too, yeah. But the threats were real. You can't, you know, today it's even worse. But even then, you know, and Ken really would. He'd sit in his kitchen window at 3 o'clock in the morning, and some of the real strange people would show up. I used to put security around this house all the time. He used to think Ann Wang was spying on him, and then I'd meet with Ann Wang, and Ann Wang would say, "Your boss, Ken, is spying on me." And I would say, "Both of them, look, you both know what you're doing. Nobody's spying on anybody. Ken's out watering his flower plants from his house."
Hey, Ray, so, yeah. Speaking about spies, the baseball story, can you tell us a little bit about the baseball spy that you closely with?
Oh, yeah, well, all right. Okay, listen. I know nothing about sports. Bob wanted me to tell you about Mo Berg. I know if any of you are old enough to remember Mo Berg, Morris J. Berg, the most intellectual baseball player that ever played baseball. He played with Babe Ruth, went to Japan in 1935 with Babe Ruth. He took motion pictures with a Bell and Howell camera that were used by the film, the crew of the Enola Gay, to drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki 10 years later. But Mo was a dear friend of mine, much older than me, but he was a spy extraordinaire. There's a movie about him called The Catcher Who Was a Spy. And several books have been written about him, but he was an extraordinary man. He went into Nazi-occupied Austria, and he had two tasks: one, to talk to heavy water scientists in the defecting to America, or to kill them. And fortunately, he talked the fellow into coming to America. Mo Berg went to Manhattan with General Leslie Groves to build the atomic bomb, and Mo lived in the Hotel Vendome here in Boston. Mm-hmm. Frequent guest of mine, could speak 9 different languages, and I'll tell you what a jerk I am. They ended. I know nothing about sports. I landed in Granite City, Illinois during the World Series, and Mo Berg called me up. He said, "The World Series is on at Busch Stadium. Would you like to go?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "How many tickets?" I said, "1. I just got here and I don't know anybody." He said, "I'm giving you 14 tickets." So we go to Busch Stadium, we sit down, the usher comes up and says, "Mr. Humphrey, would you come with us?" I said to my friend, newfound friends, "I'll see you after the game." So after the game, they said, "Who are you with?" And I said, "Mo Berg." "Who else?" I said, "Ted Williams. He sells fishing rods for Sears and Roebuck." They said, "Well, who else was there?" And they said, "Stan Musial, Joe DiMaggio, Joe Cronin." And I said, "Yeah, I guess they were there, but I don't know them. What do they do?" So I don't know anything about sports, but that's Mo introduced me to baseball. Yeah. Thank you very much. So enjoy it.
Thank you, Ray. That was terrific. Look, the microphone is off, too. Okay, any case, want to get some